Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Rick Crawford, who joins us to discuss the latest on ag labor reform. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Port of Baltimore is shut down after a container ship crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge, collapsing it entirely. The port is a significant shipping point for the American sugar exports. The company that owns the Domino Sugar Plant in Baltimore says the closure won't have an immediate impact on their operations since the plant still has 6 to 8 weeks of raw sugar available. This comes as USDA recently announced an increase to sugar import quotas because American sugar supplies have been relatively tight. According to USDA data, more than 575,000 metric tons of sugar were unloaded in Baltimore in 2022. Officials are investigating after herds of dairy cows in Texas and Kansas tested positive for highly pathogenic avian influenza. USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service says unpasteurized samples of milk tested positive, affecting about 10% of cattle on the farms. However, the department wants you to know that beef and milk are safe. A joint statement issued by dairy groups notes cattle and other mammals don't spread the virus and that it is extremely rare for humans to get. And finally, the government is now funded through September after President Biden signed a government funding bill. The package included funding for the Labor Department, which administers the H-2A visa program, as well as Departments of Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, and Defense. Both parties spent months arguing with each other and amongst themselves over funding and policy, creating a polarized political atmosphere. One of the most recent examples is Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene filing a motion to vacate House Speaker Mike Johnson. Despite the division in Congress, the House Ag Committee's Agricultural Labor Working Group released their final report earlier this month. Arkansas Republican Rick Crawford is one of the co-chairmen of the group, and we asked him how they were able to come up with a compromise despite the hectic atmosphere in Congress.
What we did was on the very front end, my co-chair Don Davis from North Carolina and I, we laid down the parameters that we are going to narrowly focus on H-2A reform and nothing else. And that meant, so yes, H-2A is a migrant workforce issue, but we're not going to veer off course and start talking about immigration issues in the context of DACA, for example, or pathways to citizenship or green cards or any of those things. We want a very narrow focus on how we fix the H-2A program.
So what would you say are the next steps for or the path for getting these recommendations implemented?
Well, I think people need to understand that even though that our committee was drawn from the Ag Committee, that the House Ag Committee has no jurisdiction legislatively on the H-2A program. What we do have is subject matter expertise and access to the relevant stakeholders so that we could bring them in and let them make their presentations to the committee, to the working group. And this was about a 9-month process, and we really heard from a lot of folks across a geographic spectrum, the crop production spectrum. Our first step was hearing from them and then creating what we have, an interim report saying, here's our findings. Then we heard from members off the committee, outside of the ag world, that wanted to be heard. And what we heard from them was, well, you know, we really had a good effort last Congress on the Workforce Modernization Act. The problem that they ran into was that they were kind of trying to shoehorn those really difficult issues in that we talked about, we don't want to talk about. Because when you try to leverage one against the other, you don't get either. And so what we did was we took what we thought were the relevant parts of the Workforce Modernization Act and considered those in those 25 points that we ultimately dealt with. And of the 25, 21 were adopted, which is a pretty stellar accomplishment. And of those 21, 13 were adopted unanimously.
Mm-hmm. Now, I kind of want to talk about a timeline because, you know, you mentioned all of the complexities of this issue, you know, especially since, like, it's a political year and border security is a growing issue amongst the American people. I do want to ask, you know, what does a timeline look like for seeing these recommendations kind of cross the finish line and seeing them actually implemented then?
Well, and that's something that we really don't have much control over. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to force committees to act on this. What we can do is we shared the information. The response has been positive from the various committee chairs, but it's ultimately going to be on their timeline. Now, we can sort of, you know, gently nudge them and say, hey, don't forget, you know, these are really important issues, and hope that they'll be responsive. And like I said, it's been a very favorable, positive response thus far.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Crawford right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. As Congress enters into the month of April, Congressman Crawford says he is hopeful Republicans and Democrats can come together to work on a farm bill.
Where I see things going south in these negotiation processes is that a lot of times you'll agree on a point and they'll say, okay, next issue, and then get to a next issue or the following issue. And they'll go, well, I could go along with this if we can go back to that and fix that. Well, no, we're not, because we agreed on that. It doesn't need fixing. We agreed on that. It's off the table. If we could have that type of dynamic in our negotiations where we say, first off, define the work on the front end, have pretty much a goal of what we want it to look like on the back end. And then as we're negotiating, we take those agreed upon items off the table and we don't waste any time continuing to negotiate things that we agreed on. Now we're going to zero in on the things that may be a little more difficult. And if we can also find some things that we're never going to agree on, and take those off the table, that allows us to spend time on the things that we might be able to find consensus on. That, I think, is why we were successful in this effort.
So your colleague, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, has initiated a vote to remove the Speaker of the House. You know, in addition to that, the Republican majority is shrinking. So is it realistic to expect a farm bill to pass at this point with this political environment?
Well, it makes things more difficult, obviously. And that also changes, you know, the dynamics with regard to how we engage on the Senate side. So, you know, as long as we have those kinds of things at play, it does make it difficult for us to do the day-to-day work. And so I'm hoping that, you know, that we're out for Easter break for this 2 weeks, that will have some sort of a chilling effect, and that maybe we can take that off the table as an item to have to wrestle with, because we saw how damaging that was in the fall of last year for a period of almost 6 weeks, I guess, as we were wrestling with the process.
So wrapping up our conversation here, you know, out of all of the challenges facing agriculture, what is the number one issue that you would like to see addressed in the next farm bill?
Well, I have to just, from my constituents' perspective, we've got to address the reference prices and price loss coverage. We're dealing with data that is at best 12 years old, maybe even 14 years old. that baseline has shifted, and it's not reflective of what the demands are for farmers today. And that doesn't matter that where you are in production agriculture. It has not. We've made a mistake, in my opinion, both times, in that we didn't index the reference prices. Had we done that, it would have been fine. The problem is, or was, that we were dealing with historically low interest rates and weren't thinking about when these interest rates correct, not if, but when, because it's not just farmers that are facing high interest rates. It's the supply chain. It's the inputs. Everything is gone up, and inflation is taking a heavy toll. So you went from, 2.5% crop loan to, in the next year, maybe as high as 4.5%. And then follow that with maybe your crop loans as high as 9.5%, in some cases 10%. I mean, we went from dealing with almost free money to, in a span of 2 years, bumping 10% interest rates on production loans. That's insane. And yet our reference prices didn't address those economic demands in a meaningful way. In fact, it's just completely out of whack. That makes it difficult for us to address Title I of the Farm Bill. They don't call it Title I for nothing. I mean, it's important.
Congressman, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Thank you.
We'll be right back with this week's panel discussion. But first, our Andrew Hunneke takes a look at the average wage of farm workers in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Data from USDA's most recent farm labor survey shows ag workers are making more on average, but not as much as those who don't work on farms. This chart shows the average wage of farm workers compared to production and non-supervisory employees that don't work on farms, as well as the federal minimum wage from 1993 to 2023. According to USDA, farm operators are paying workers an average wage of nearly $19 an hour, which is up 6% from the year before. In comparison, those who don't work on farms are making nearly $30 an hour, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Both have climbed substantially since 1993, and farm workers are making almost $13 an hour more on average. Meanwhile, the federal minimum wage has stayed at $7.25 since 2009. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe on agripulse.com or on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to our panel discussion, where we will continue to talk about ag labor reform. Joined this week with Michael Marsh with the National Council of Agricultural Employers, and ag policy lawyer Christy Boswell with Alston and Byrd. And Christy, my first question is to you. So, you know, the House recently came out with unanimous approval with the Ag Labor Working Group's recommendations. But given we're in a time where border security is a very polarized issue and it's also an election year, it's most likely that, you know, these recommendations are not going to pass or make a dent in this Congress. But my question is, what about next Congress?
So I think the work of the Agriculture Committee here is so great. It is bipartisan. It was intentional. And while the Agriculture Committee doesn't hold the pin on a lot of the legislation, they're not the committee of jurisdiction, it just goes so far to show the dedication of the Ag Committee members who are closest really to those agricultural constituents to be able to come together to look at this very difficult issue that is very politically challenging and focus with unanimous support and majority support on different recommendations that can either be put all together or can be used as opportunities arise. And I think that that is just a strong showing and positive momentum going into next Congress and looking at various different pieces of legislation that hopefully some of these recommendations can be added to, or really as a template for a broader piece of ag labor legislation, something that farmers have been begging for.
You know, given the controversy that's going on down at the border, what is it going to take to get the two parties to agree on immigration reform?
The crisis in the agricultural workforce continues to increase. We are seeing real economic impacts in rural communities as a result of labor instability. We are seeing farms consolidate or going out of business entirely. We are seeing business patterns shifting from high-value specialty crops to other more mechanized crops. You know, at some point, the bleeding has to stop, and we are working to inform lawmakers about these impacts that are happening economically, that either we're importing our labor or we're importing our food, and trying to separate this conversation from the immigration debate to a workforce labor debate that is separate and distinct from the border crisis.
And Michael, I want to get your input on that as well. You know, does the border issue have to be resolved in Congress before Congress can address workforce issues?
Hannah, I don't think so. But at the same time, we all recognize that immigration reform is kind of the third rail of politics in Washington, D.C. Everyone's got an opinion, everyone's got an idea on it, and unfortunately, we just kind of run into that when we start talking about things that really impact farmers and ranchers across the United States. We have to have access to a workforce, and right now we don't. Last year, we had over 370,000 jobs that were certified by the Department of Labor. We didn't have enough domestic workers available to take those positions, so those jobs essentially went to foreign workers who came in on the H-2A program. We have got to have a workforce if we're going to continue to sustain American agriculture here. And right now, it's very, very challenging. That's why I think, similar to what Christy said, I think that the efforts, the bipartisan effort that we saw with the Ag Labor Working Group was fantastic. The leadership of Chairman Crawford and Chairman Davis, as they were putting that together, was outstanding. We can come together as agriculture to solve some of these tough issues. But unfortunately, some of these extraneous issues around immigration reform prevent us from actually getting to a solution, I'm afraid.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. The minimum wage rate that employers have to pay H-2A workers is known as the adverse effect wage rate. USDA comes out every November with the Farm Labor Survey, which determines what that wage rate will be for the following year. Michael Marsh with the National Council of Agricultural Employers says he'd like that to change.
The National Ag Statistics Service does a great job. USDA does a great job, and they always have. The challenge is when the Department of Labor takes that survey and misuses it in order to establish adverse effect wage rates in a temporary ag worker program. Actually, Secretary Perdue, the previous Secretary of Agriculture, recognized that issue, and unfortunately, it still maintains the same. I think Secretary Vilsack at an ag appropriations hearing last week got a question on that. But unfortunately, it's the misuse of that that information unfortunately is making us so uncompetitive in the global marketplace. Today, more than 60% of the fresh fruit we consume in the United States and more than 40% of the fresh vegetables we consume are coming from our foreign competition. And when you think about having an adverse effect wage rate in California of $19.75 an hour versus going across the border to Mexico, where a worker will make $1.50 an hour, or if you're in British Columbia and you're paying your workers $12.56 an hour under their program versus $19.25 an hour in Washington State, why in the world would you want to produce food in the United States and when you can simply shift it overseas? So Christy's point, you know, I think is right on. We can either import our workers or we can import our food, and I really don't want to be dependent on someone else to feed me.
So if not looking at the farm labor survey to get that input, what would you base the wage rate off of?
I think that I would base it on what the market demands. So that if you had some demand in a marketplace for workers at a certain level or certain rate, dependent upon the relationship between the farmer as well as the worker, and they can work that out. and you can kind of see that, in my estimation, markets are very elegantly and allocate resources to their highest and best use in any economy. It's just a matter of arithmetic, to tell you the truth. So if you've got workers that are there and they're valuable, the farmer will end up paying them whatever the worker is worth.
And Christy, wrapping up our conversation with you, what would you say are the biggest barriers to making these recommendations a reality?
The biggest barrier by far is the politics. It is as encouraging lawmakers to take hard votes on what is frankly a very complex issue. The complexity of the H2A program really is a regulatory creature. We've seen regulations that have evolved from 1986 to changes in the George W. Bush administration, to changes in the Obama administrations, to changes in the Trump administrations, to changes in the Biden administrations. And when you have those layers of regulatory, you know, structures, it gets really hard to unravel them, and it gets really complex. I mean, you mentioned the adverse effect wage rate and the farm labor survey. You know, now we also have a bifurcated wage rate with the occupational employment and wage survey. So we need to be able to boil all of that down, be able to get those high level points of what is so critical to have labor stability. And that's what this working group report does. It takes the big ticket items, you know, access for year round, lowering costs, using technology to create efficiencies in the temporary worker program, and ensuring that whatever legislation passes results in a long-term future flow program that gives farmers the labor they need long into future, no matter what type of operation and no matter where they are in the country.
That's all we have time for today. Christy, Michael, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke gives an update on the adverse effect wage rate in this week's Map It Out.
Hourly rates in the H-2A program are not supposed to undercut wages paid to domestic workers. The Department of Labor sets an adverse effect wage rate for each state every year based on a USDA wage survey. This map shows the rate for each state this year. It ranges from just under $14 in southern states like Alabama and Mississippi to more than $17 in most states and nearly $21 for the District of Columbia. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation, AEWR wages increased in every state this year, led by Washington and Oregon, where workers will see a nearly $1.30 more on average compared to last year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Both the House and the Senate will not be in session next week. USDA will release its annual hatchery production report on Tuesday. And finally, our Rebecca Alvey will be at the Consumer Federation of America's National Food Policy Conference Tuesday and Wednesday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to allow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.